This is the Australian Lure Fishing Podcast, where we're building Australia's largest and most comprehensive resource for Australian lure fishers. Join us every Monday, Wednesday and Friday as we break down the locations, the techniques and the tackle that you need to catch more fish on lures. Or visit our website, doclures.com, to get the free resources and tools that will help you to achieve the results that you want. So if improving your lure fishing is your aim, then settle in and enjoy the top information shared by our hosts and by top lure fishers from all around Australia.
Hi there, everybody, and welcome to the ALF. I'm Andrew Deeth, standing in as guest host for Greg Vinyl to talk about targeting and hopefully catching big brim. So in the last couple of weeks, I've reached out to some of Australia's best and most accomplished anglers to see how they go about targeting and catching big brim. So tonight we have a special guest, a special treat. So on the line, I have gun kayak angler and tournament angler, Jason Meach. So welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, Andrew, how are you going?
I'm well, mate. How are you?
I'm well.
So, mate, given this is your first time on the podcast, we'll just go through a couple of getting to know you questions. So just tell us a little bit about yourself, about maybe who you are, what you do for a job, and where your passion in fishing started maybe, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure. Mate, we live on the Central Coast. We run a locksmith business, work for ourselves, done that for a few years now. I guess the passion for fishing started as a really, really young kid. Lots of trout fishing, lots of trips up the coast, a little bit like everyone that fished and started off really young, beach worming and fishing the lakes and stuff like that. So a lot of fun. And my passion really is chasing brim in kayaks. Absolutely love it. It's so stealth.
Right, right. How long have you been doing that?
Originally started in a canoe, which was probably in about 98, so close to 20 years. And just, progressed from there into tournaments with the Hobie Kayak.
Yeah.
You know, started in about 2009 or 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
I believe it's the second year I started in it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, continued that on.
Right. And yeah, as an angler competing against you, you're always someone to watch. You're always a chance of coming through and taking a win. And with that kayak series, with those kayak series, have you had any special experience or anything that you'd like to share?
Yeah. Look, I mean, if anyone's ever considering going into these, my biggest thing is the camaraderie, the people you meet.
Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to spend night after night after night with people that I'll now consider my best mates the rest of my life, and just meet people around the world. Luckily enough to fish in a couple of world titles, so got to go to Texas and fish in two Australian titles, Australian worlds over here as well. So.
Right. And what were you chasing in Texas?
Largemouth bass, actually, yeah, in Lake Fayette and Bass Drop.
Okay, and how'd they compare to our brim? Like, what was it, same or different?
Oh, they're amazing. They're the best things in the world. I wish we had them here.
Yeah.
Very similar. I fished straight, so I think it was like 3 pounds straight through for the first 2 days.
Really?
Yeah, and they just basically like a brim, but then soon learnt that they get much bigger and love snags, so you got to go up a fair bit. You can kind of lure them into biting a lure up to 20 pounds.
Right, right. Okay, so not as leader shy as our brim.
No, I don't think they are, no. And they're throwing big Texas rigs and all kinds of weird stuff up, you know, sometimes anything up to 9 inch long.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Interesting. And how did your brim skills translate over there?
Pretty straightforward, really. It was just crankbaiting, rolling crankbaits quite slowly. And like I said, drop shotting in Texas rig plastics where you just basically hop it back or shake it and you just feel the tap, see the line move, and you just obviously set the hook a lot harder.
Okay. Okay. So, given this is a lure fishing podcast, is there anything else apart from brim that you would target regularly or would like to target?
Yeah, look, we do a little bit of a lot of trout fishing. We go to the Snowies about 3 or 4 times a year.
Right.
I'll never stop going and chasing trout. Absolutely love them. The only reason is because they just get in shallow water. And also a little bit of blackfish on fly. That's always a little bit of fun down here on the rock shelves.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I'd like to have a talk about that, but maybe not tonight. But yeah, that's... sounds very cool.
Something different, yeah.
Yeah, and while you're catching blackfish on fly off the rocks, you're getting brim with them?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, so let's move on to the main topic of tonight's discussion. So what we're going to do is try to go through and work out how you target big brim. So a lot of the guys in the tournament scene quite capable of catching brim, but sometimes the big fish are the ones that elude us. So basically we're going to just talk about how you try to zone in on the bigger fish rather than and the smaller fish, I guess.
Yeah, just trying to get the bigger fish to eat the lure.
Yeah, something like that. I think it's what everyone's trying to do. So let's start with location. So with any sort of fishing, if you can't find the fish, you're not a chance of catching them. So if you're fishing systems, do you have a preference on fishing upstream or downstream, or do you have any preference on that?
Yeah, so what I normally do is if I'm fishing a system, I really predominantly like to fish shallow, edge, flat, anything that's less than a metre of water. I never, ever pick an up or a downstream location. I always predominantly go for backs of bays, flat, and areas that I feel are going to be shallow enough to have the fish that I want to target in there. And the reason for that is because in my time fishing, I've always found that if a fish are in shallow, they're there for one reason, and that's to eat. So predominantly what I would do is look at the system, work out where I want to fish, which will be usually a lot of weed, shallow water, and I normally watch what the wind's up to for the few days leading up to it. And that'll kind of make me think about where I'm going to head then once I've seen the wind. If there's been no wind and it's getting into the colder parts of the year, I'll always go looking for the darker weed, darker bottom of the ground and rocky shores.
Right. So darker weed and darker ground.
Yeah. So here on the Central Coast, I've found that when it's darker ground, like mud ground instead of sand, or darker weed, it actually tends to hold a little bit more warmth.
Right, okay.
In that, it obviously brings the bait fish in. And I find that the fish actually at some point through the day want to get up there and probably get a little bit of warmth into them.
Yeah.
I know that fish do regulate their temperature a little bit, but I also think that they don't mind getting up in those shallower areas and sit in the weed, get a bit of cover and ambush the bait that's there and the opportunity. Like I said, the only reason they're there normally is to eat.
Yeah, okay. Do you prefer like a calm day or a windy day? What's your preference?
Personally, I prefer I know it sounds kind of weird. I actually really like glassy out conditions. I always have.
Okay.
The reason being is I use quite long rods and I turn all of my electrics off when I get in my kayak. So I don't have a live well running. I don't have a sounder on and I very rarely try and use the stakeout pole. I like to try and pitch the cast as far as I can with no wind and actually just let the lure sit there. For about I normally think about 30 seconds, sometimes up to a minute. But in that time, I'll normally just let it sit there and rest. And that's when the chance of a really, really big fish is just to get under it and watch it is something I've found, especially if there's a lot of weed around, weed patches, the fish will be sitting there waiting for that to move again. And the second it usually pops under the water is when it's going to get nailed. So I prefer no wind, but as a tournament fisherman, you just got to go out there and fish in everything that comes along. So I'll fish in wind. I've caught plenty of fish in wind and still will. And I'm not as shy as having my electrics on and stuff like that when the wind is up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. I prefer to fish the glassed out conditions a bit too, probably for different reasons. One, because I find line management just so much easier.
Yep.
When you're not trying to throw sideways into the wind. And also, I think it puts a lot of people off. So if you're fishing competition, some people are put off by the fact that it's glassed out, whereas I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Yeah, it's one or the other. If it's in glassed out conditions, they get put right off. And if it's really, really windy, yeah, they get put off too. So
yeah. And it's funny, when it's really, really windy, I've had some cracking days when I've had water hitting me in the back over the back of the kayak.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you really should get off the water, but there's too many fish.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said about just getting out there and fishing in all of those conditions instead of just having a preference. You know, that time on the water can change everything.
Yeah, okay. While you were talking there, you remind me of a conversation that I can't remember whether it was a talk you did or whether we had a conversation about casting with the wind or across the wind. Do you want to explain that to me?
Yeah, so many years ago, I fished a place called St. George's Basin, as you're pretty aware of, and I observed, it was just in a pre-fish. It was the first time I'd ever fished it, and I'd pre-fished, and it was completely glassed out for the best part of 3 or 4 hours and then blew up. And I observed some bait fish, and I was watching them, and they were really, really, really struggling to swim against the wind.
Right.
But what they didn't struggle to do was swim across or with the wind. And while watching them, the minute they swam across, I noticed other fish, be tailor, flathead, whatever they were, would come up and hit them. So if they were going downwind, it seemed fish weren't that interested. If they were going against the wind, they weren't that interested. But the minute they went across the wind, it seemed like a lot more fish were interested. After a little mucking around on that pre-fish, I come to the conclusion that I think that the fish, a little bit like trout, sit in a river with their heads in the current.
Yeah.
They get a bit of oxygen. And if a fish is pointing up into the wind and you pull it across, there's more chance of it seeing and hearing the lure.
Yeah.
Because it's got more point of its face looking at, if that makes sense. So yeah. It's a little bit like when you're fishing in a trout river. The trout sitting up river, you drift your nymph down across.
Yeah, okay.
And it's exactly as when I'm fishing the flat. I'll always cast across the wind. I never cast with the wind. It's one of the things I don't do. I never, ever do it. Something I've always done. If I power pole down, I go straight across. The reason I'm power poling down is to go across and drag my crankbait across that silly, silly, shallow water.
Okay. And when you say across the wind, are you talking like 90 degrees to the wind or?
90, yeah, all the time.
90 degrees. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's quite different to what I would do. So I find that really interesting. How do you go with your line management with getting big bows in the line and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so I don't really stress too much about that. As if anyone's ever seen me fish, I actually hold my rod up fairly high. What it actually does is it moves the lure for you as well, which I've always found. I think it looks a little bit more natural, especially when the wind gets up a bit and it starts to pull it across a little bit quicker. When the bite is on, you don't even need to wind. You just can hold your rod up a little bit and it will move the lure slow enough to get a little bit of action in it and the fish will generally hit it.
Yeah, okay.
Otherwise, you can cast it out and then throw your line, your braid straight down onto the water. But what I do find there is that you'll get a really, really big belly on the water. That makes sense as well because I wind so slowly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. All right, to touch on winding slowly, have you got a particular reel size that you would use or a particular reel, or are you just winding super slow?
Yeah. I mean, I've just changed back to the Shimano, gone back to the 2500 size only for the fact that I prefer the drag in them. You'd only have to do one or two clicks instead of the dialer where you do about 10 clicks to get the same result. In saying that, it's always been a 2000. I'm not a fan of the high speed.
Yeah, okay.
For the fact that predominantly I can almost guarantee that all of my big yellowfin have come from a really slow retrieve and that I don't think having a fast reel for that scenario. So a 2.5 to 2,000. So 2,000 in a Daiwa and a 2.5 in a Shimano would be where I'd be sitting every day.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I predominantly fish Daiwa at the moment, but the couple of in the Shimano ranges, there was, I can't remember the actual brand, the actual type of reel it was, but they have reels that run a bit slower than, say, the Stratix. And I bought that for crankbaiting many years ago. So for exact same reason.
Yep. And it's that, and you will. I actually have noticed and noted that some Daiwa reels many years ago actually wound quicker and it affected my fishing. And it actually, one of the things I'm a big fan of is like mental, so not getting spooked in your mind. And it messed with my mind, these reels that went quicker, where I actually had bought five of them. I got rid of them all because I just knew they just wound too quick for what I wanted to do.
Right. Yeah, okay. I'm going to come back to the mental thing. It's one of the things I wanted to talk to all the guys about. What goes on in your brain when you're doing this, but we're going to circle back to that. So you're fishing predominantly, let's say 1 meter or less, chasing big brim. What sort of lines and leaders are you running straight through? You're running line to leader. What's your basic setup?
So not a fan of straight through, gave it up. Reason being is I think you can just go a long enough leader to get the same result from straight through. The other thing is I feel that you can have a little bit more line management with braid, especially using something you can see, being that, you know, an orange or a darker blue or something like that. I always usually go between 6 to 10 pounds of braid and leader. I never, ever change. I'm really boring. It's always 4 pound in there.
Right. 4 pound. Any particular brand?
Rock FC. Yeah.
Rock FC. Okay.
Yeah. And I haven't changed in, it'd be 10 years since I found Rock. So that'd be the same. I did try the straight through for a little while. The only reason the straight through doesn't work for what I do, as you know, you've seen where I fish.
Yeah.
I can tell the difference between my lure hitting a rock or weed.
Yeah, okay.
And if I'm not using braid, I can't tell the difference. And I want to know what my lure's doing at every time I turn that handle or move the rod. And with straight through, though I've caught absolute cracking fish and actually won comps on it, it just isn't what I want to do.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I mean, myself, I've struggled with straight through, and I've got reels that have it that I've never used. But I know when there's a few guys I'm going to talk to that I know they fish a lot of straight through. So it's interesting to see everyone's different opinion on that. So, yeah.
I mean, I've fished it all the way down to 2 pounds on 8 foot rods. And you catch a fish, you really do. It can be really finessey. But like I said, the control and the feel for what I do, I understand that guys might sit out a bit wider and sit in that meter and a half and slow wind. But for what I want to do and how I do it, it's braid and leader every day.
Okay. So we're fishing in 1 meter of water, typically either rocky edges or weed flats. What sort of lures are we throwing at them?
So a few years back, I would have said to you it was a Smith Camion. That would have been all I would have used, which was 10 years ago now.
I remember.
Yeah, and then a company by the name of Pro Lure came out and brought what I still think today is the best crankbait ever made, which was the S36 in black. For big fish, I reckon that's probably taken majority of them in the kayak tournament series for the last 5 years. I just think it catches fish, and that's what I've always used. It's only always shallow. They come straight out of the pack with decoys on them. Heath from Pro Lure has just nailed that lure for the way I fish personally, and everything he did with it was the black body, the right colour black, which makes a big difference, I feel, is throwing the correct silhouette and red eye, giving him something to kind of really focus on. The other thing that I do that a lot of other people won't do is I don't actually throw black every cast. Like I actually show them all the other colours first and give them a lot.
Really?
Yeah. For the reason, I don't want them to get used to seeing the black all the time.
Yeah, okay.
So especially if I'm going to go on pre-fish or if I know there's big fish in there and I'm getting little bumps and stuff like that, I'll keep throwing the other colours for a while. And then I'll like really concentrate on throwing that black and slowing it right up and giving him a really good chance to see the silhouette instead of the bait fishy profile colours. But it's always the S36 is where I start from Pro Lure.
Yeah, that's a famous lure now and relatively not that old. So when you're fishing this, how are you working it? Like if you're in a rocky edge with maybe coming into weed?
So realistically what I'm looking for and how I work it is this. I'm always looking for a flat that doesn't drain, if that makes sense.
No, what does that mean?
One of the places I can always go back to is like St. George's Basin or Lake Quarry. You don't get vast amounts of tide height. So it means that I'm going to get a big buildup of natural weeds with holes in between it and pockets of sand or pockets of mud. And how it will happen is I'll physically go up and fish where the bank meets the weed. And there'll generally be, you know, maybe a foot to 3 meters of mud and sand for that first weed bed, and then I'll work all the way out until it gets to about a meter deep. From there, I'll cast into the patches, and I will literally let it sit there for, like I said, 20, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and I won't wind. I'll just pull the rod tip so the lure pops under. And one of the biggest tricks is at that point is actually drag the rod tip probably about 2 foot in the air. So the lure actually works without winding the reel at all, and just move the lure in that pocket and then start to wind. And the minute it catches on weed, people think to rip it in. I like to hook the weed and then just shake the lure off. I nearly do that all the way up to about a meter. And the fish will eat it even when there's weed on it. They'll come out and grab it because they're sitting in those little pockets and those little holes. And I never drop my rod. I always keep it up high. And the reason why I feel like that is because it gives me direct contact on the fish. The minute I feel them hit, I usually load up. And because they're in that kind of shallowy, I'm there to eat. They don't usually miss it. There's no usually tap. It's usually just tap, they're on.
Right. And like for anyone that doesn't know the S26, so it's a bib lure with just a shallow running bib. I assume that would catch a fair bit of weed.
Catches plenty. Yep.
Fair enough. And catches plenty of fish.
Depending on what weed you're fishing, when you rip it, even if there's weed on it, they'll still eat it.
Yeah, okay.
People don't think they will, but they still just eat it. And the thing is, if you just rip it straight out and then put another cast in, you've generally spooked the fish. So sometimes even if you just stop and don't wind or do anything, the lure will actually float out backwards.
Yeah, okay. It'll go, yeah.
Yeah. Or that looks like a little bait fish sitting in the, you know, or a little prawn or a crab just sitting there shaking.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so when you say shaking, you're just shaking the rod tip up and down, side to side, or how's that look?
Yep, it's just a shake and winding the reel at the same time, just try and thread off the weed, but without moving it. So 3 or 4 feet, you just want to move a couple of inches to try and get it out.
Okay. And how long have you been using this technique? Because this, I've heard this before, but I've not ever been able to replicate it. So how long have you been doing this?
No. So I would say probably since about 2004, 2005, when Surge, we were using some handcrafted timber lures by Surge, which was, it might have even been earlier than that, at in the Brisbane Water.
Yeah, okay.
Up the Back Bay. We started to learn about that. But, I mean, this all came from trout fishing years ago in really, really, really shallow water.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. There's quite a number of really good brim fishermen that do a bit of trout fishing. It seems to go hand in hand.
Yeah. I think it's just the finesse, the mental game with them. We do a lot of lake fishing instead of river fishing, which is a bit different because the old river fishing is cast out and wind back and not hit anything, where the lake fishing is, you know, you've got to stalk them, you've got to be quiet. You see them, they move in a couple of inches of water at times. And if you don't get that cast spot on, then they're going, they're gone.
Yeah, okay. Similar to brim, sometimes you don't get the cast in the right spot, they're not coming.
They're not coming, no. And that's the biggest key is, I feel, is that self-finesse. Take your time, don't rush them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting.
And don't feel bad that you can't get that shallow technique, because I've tried to teach lots and lots of people, and there's some people that just really, really get it. I know a bloke like Terry Grimer, he gets it. He come up to me and goes, I get it. And there's lots of other people that just really, really struggle. But put them out in the meter and they catch lots and lots of fish.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, for me, that sort of stuff is just practice. You got to go and look at a technique like that and just go and go and go until you work it out. And then one day you get it and then you can't understand why you couldn't do it. So
that's right. And that's what it is.
Yeah. If you're going to put your S26 down and fish something else, what are you going to throw at them?
It'd be a pretty close game to a ranger from the Oz Tackle, I think it was, years ago, in black again, of course, if it's not going to be a camion. And the only reason is, I don't know if people are aware of this or not, but is the camion and the S36 are a tiny little bit different in size. And if you don't have any much rain, you get a bit of drought, the prawn size seems to shorten down a bit, so it does a lot smaller. While we've got lots of rain around, all the nutrients are in the water, the prawns seem to get bigger. And that's just one of the things that I've always paid attention to is,
okay,
there's lots of rain around, just fish the big one. If there's been a drought, just go to the small one. But it'd be pretty hard to beat that ranger.
Yeah.
I think you've had a bit of experience with it too.
After some tuition.
Yeah, it's very underestimated. But, I mean, there's lots of lures you can do this with, but you just need to obviously practice.
Yeah, just practice. And I think with the ranger, like, it's something different, just a slow sinking lure, whereas nearly everything on the market either suspends or floats.
Yeah. And that's the other lure that I would suggest that people look at is that ranger, is for the fact that it does sink. It is a little bit harder to fish in those weedy areas, but get a lot of fish on the drop.
You do. And if you want a flathead, throw a ranger at them. They love them.
Throw a ranger at them. They eat it every day, yeah. And there's lots of big flathead where we go because they love to get up on that sun and bask themselves too. So.
And would you fish like a different type of lure, like a plastic or a surface lure? Is there anything else you'd throw in those areas?
Nothing.
Nothing. Well, there you go.
Nothing. No, I don't waste my time.
Wow. Well, there you go. That's really interesting.
No, basically there just to get, what I've learned is I'm there just to get a reaction. I don't want to, I can chuck a prawn in there, a gulp prawn or something like that. They're going to eat it. The problem is with what I've found with gulp prawns is in these kind of areas, or if you're going to throw a grub or something. One, if you throw like a really, really weighted grub, which I like to throw in shallow water, in these areas, they're going to just fall straight into really thick weed without getting any hang time in the water at all. And then so I've changed over to lightly weighted plastics and flicked them in there. These fish are there to eat. And if you get big fish, like I'm talking, you know, kilo, 900 grams, anything over that, even 800, because they're there to eat, if you throw a little grub or a prawn in there, there's a really good chance you're going to hook them in the gills.
Yeah, okay.
And that I found that down in the Brisbane Water. I used to use a lot of those gulp prawns. I think it was in New Penny many years ago when I used to fish with Luke a lot. And I found that one place that catch a lot of big fish on that unweighted, completely unweighted, just a worm hook, they would so well that they would have them so far down their mouth that in a tournament scenario, you would be scared that the fish were going to die.
Yeah, okay, which is not good, obviously.
No, and in any scenario, And so one of the reasons I do use strength aid is that. And the other reason is because a few more extra hook points there too, just to connect if they're having a swipe instead. As you know, they like to tap their head.
Yeah, okay. So what about if I said to you, Jason, you can't fish the flats today, mate. You need to catch a big brim. Have you got any options for me?
Yeah, so instantly I would go and get a deep crankbait.
Yep, which would be?
It's going to probably be an atomic. The reason, only reason being is because I like to move the rod around a lot while I'm fishing for brim. The atomics don't blow out to the sides too much. A lot of other companies I've found, the lure will blow out to the side, so you've got to keep the hook really, the rod really still. So I'd be putting on a deep diving crankbait. I would be going to find any kind of structure I possibly could. I'd be casting back at it, and I'd be winding it deep as I could, past poles, rock, whatever I could, if I couldn't fish flat. And I wouldn't change anything. It'd be brave. It would be 4 pound leader, and I'd probably stick the rod in the water instead.
Get it down deeper.
Yep.
And same deal, like fishing quite slowly, like the same sort of technique, or?
So when it's slowly, it's like ridiculously slow. I literally just want to feel almost like a melody coming through my rod with the lure hitting and bouncing, but just not moving far at all. So that means super, super slow.
Yeah, interesting. So with the current weather conditions that have happened, that have battered the sort of east coast of Australia over the last month or so, where we've had unprecedented amounts of rain, if you had to go and fish your local tomorrow, which is, for anyone that's a kayak tournament, there's a kayak tournament angler, there's a tournament on in 2 weeks. What would your tactics be? What do you reckon you'd do?
So because of all the fresh water we've just had, I'm still a big fan of going to Hill the Rack. There's lots of patches in between there that hold exactly what I've just said. There's some deep water structure stuff. Some shallow water structure stuff there that never gets out of the water around the back of some racks there. The fish are going to be sitting there. The biggest problem you're probably going to have is that those fish have been eating and they haven't stopped eating the whole time in the Brisbane water. That's what I assume you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they are. Yeah, anywhere up that way.
For the fact that they've just had so much food coming down in their face. People think the fish are gone. They're not. They're there. They're sitting there. There's lots of seagrass beds in the Brisbane water as well. So my plan would actually probably be at that point would be I would probably fish the rack and then go and look at seagrass beds. Once again, the seagrass beds in Kincumber Bay, somewhere like that, they have this really kind of strange edge that you get seagrass and then it just goes a foot of water for about 150 metres before the bank. Literally just be sitting on the edge of that seagrass and walk lure along because they'll just come out of it and grab it. And if the big ones are there, you'll actually lose more than you'll catch because they just grab it and go straight into that seagrass and bury you straight away.
Yeah, okay. And the seagrass beds, so it's not sort of the same situation where you're casting into the weed. You're trying to run down along the edge of it.
No, so the seagrass is trying to be different because it is so thick and it is so hard to, if you land in the middle of it, to get it through. What we try and do in that scenario is try and cast down the edges of it, but as you're winding it back, imagine you're just trying to hook a strand of it. So you can actually catch your lure on it and then wiggle it a little bit and shake it. And the second it's off, if there's any fish sitting there, it's on. They'll grab it straight away. They don't hesitate at all. But it's very hard to do. It's one of those things that, like you said, you practice and practice and practice, and eventually one day you get it. And in that scenario, the deep dive is the better one for that because it does help you just grab one strand instead of all the hook points being exposed as a shallow diver because of the way the crankbait sits on. But that's where I'd be sitting. I'd be up on the edges there, casting around the edges of those. If not, it would be in racks, probably close to the start line, winding really, really slowly and know that they're there. They're waiting for it. The only problem you're going to have is they've had so much food that they could either be full or very fat and angry.
Yeah. What, are you still fishing your 4 pound leader?
Yeah.
Okay, and how are you managing that through the racks?
So I don't actually go and sit directly in racks. I fish at each individual pole and I'll wind it past it. But like I said, I like to get up behind the racks where, you know, no one's going to be. They're going to find it really hard to get in there. The fish are a little bit left alone in those situations. So even when it's dropping, I'll be fishing that last little bit that's dropping out because I know the fish are coming back down it. really don't like fishing my local waterways because it's so much pressure because you've so many places you've got to go, you know, so many different areas. And I find that kind of a bit of a head game in fishing your locals. I mean, the other thing is too is that there's some big fish in the deep out there too that you'd be able to throw. I think we were talking about it the other day, some Samaki vibes or something like that, that would work really, really well, but you'd probably get a bit of dewey bycatch as well.
Yeah, deweys and flatties from experience. Mm.
But they will be schooled up, you know. There is a chance if you found the patches of fish that can be up in Greenpoint and stuff, there's every chance you're going to have a 50 fish day in there.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it just depends how dirty it is, you know. But these crisp, still days right now are the best days we've had. You know, these are the days you have the best fishing on the Central Coast.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting. After so many weeks of rain, I'm having a few nice days. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's hard to take. Yeah.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to touch on is mindset. So if you're going out to target big bream, is there anything you're saying to yourself over and over or you know, where's your head at? Is there something going on there?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that I've come up with regarding mindset and the way I approach things. And it's come from a lot of people that have approached it and done really well over the years as well. And I guess there's about four or five different key things that I use that I've watched lots of other people do the same things, a little bit like Luke and that, to catch big fish. And so the first few things are is I never, ever look at anything that is not in my control. So if it's wind, I don't care about it. If it's raining, I don't care about it. I always keep the things I can control.
Mm-hmm. Such as, yeah.
So, you know, casting, lure preference, where I'm fishing, how fast I fish it. They're the things I worry about. I don't worry about the other. The next thing is I always have the scenario of, in my head is, it's happened once, it'll happen again. So if a big fish has eaten it and I've done it time and time and time and time again, it's going to continue to do it. So I never, ever lose faith in what I've done. There is a time to give up.
Yeah.
And be very, very consistent. So when I say be very, very consistent, be prepared, don't overcomplicate things, and do exactly the same thing. For example, I fished in a tournament a few years back that I actually didn't have a fish until 10 o'clock, and I think you may have even fished it, and it was in George's River, and I got close to 3 kilos.
Okay.
Fishing the rack. I didn't have a fish until 10 o'clock. I literally hadn't had a bite, and I knew everyone else had caught fish. And I paddled onto the bank, and I needed to go to the toilet, so I went to the toilet, I come back out, and I sat there, and I said, everyone else has caught fish. The only thing that I can do is go out and concentrate on exactly what I have in my control, which was cast out, slow down, just concentrate on every cast.
Yeah, okay.
So that was, if it took me 10 minutes to do that cast, then it took me 10 minutes. If it took me 2 minutes, it took me 2 minutes, but I concentrated and I slowed right down, like literally slowed right down, completely stopped. And I ended up thinking, I think I got maybe 20 fish. I was upgrading,
wow,
you know, 900 gram fish by the end of the comp. I didn't want it to finish because I was still catching fish after everyone else. I've even seen Luke do that. I've seen lots of other guys do it and had the experience of fishing around those guys to realize that slowing down and just paying attention to what's in your control is something that it can change everything, only for the fact that even if you don't catch a fish, you know you've done everything in your possible will to do it. Instead of worrying about what the wind's doing, if it's raining, what's that other guy doing over there, you just straight on what's in your control. And then the last one is, literally, I was saying before, is if you be consistent. What I mean by that is every cast, just be the same. For at least now to see if it changes. Because if you're not, and you're changing lures all the time, and you keep chopping and changing and doing all these weird things, you'll never work out a pattern. I think that's it. I've learned it from Luke. I've learned it from blokes like you, Greg Lewis many years ago, same thing.
Yeah. Actually, Greg Lewis is one of the guys who a few of the top anglers talk about. He hasn't been on the tournament scene for quite a while, but he definitely gets a mention a bit.
Yeah. I think it's just a very honed angler, very, very skilled, and ability of being able to catch quality fish, if not the biggest all the time, but just always quality.
Yeah, always consistent.
And a lot of that, I think a lot of that does come down to that, knowing you're capable of doing it too. One of the biggest things I've found, as you know, I don't fish anywhere near as much as what I used to. Is anyone ever says to me how you catch big fish and how do you become better at fishing? It's a sport. If you don't practice, you won't get there.
Yeah, I think so. Time on the water.
It's very simple. Yep. If rain, if it's hail, if it's windy, many years ago I fished 5 days every afternoon for week, day, and just kept fishing and it showed. Like I could tell to the point where I asked people that are fishing a lot, are you at the point where you know you're about to catch a fish? Say yes. And then that you know that they're getting there. Many times that I've fished for bream especially, but trout as well, where I know I'm about to catch a fish. And there's only a few anglers that I've ever spoken to that have that feeling.
Yeah, okay. I think, like you said, time on the water, like, you know, just practice.
It's time on the water. It's a sport. It's just you've got to practice. If you're not practicing, your skills fall away. I mean, I just fished in Foster on the weekend and was casting really well and missed 10 fish because I haven't fished properly for a bream in 3 years.
Yeah. Well, there you go, mate. Well, you've certainly shared a lot, and actually there's a few things that I didn't know, even though we've talked quite a bit in the past. I like the part where you talked about the weed. That's something I'm certainly going to have to practice going and not retrieving a lure that's you know got a bit of weed on it, because for a lot of people, myself included, often that's the default position. So
And people get really frustrated from it. I found that in Tasmania as well. People would complain. A really vivid memory was hooking an absolute beast in the back of one of those little lagoons that everyone had moved away from because there was so much weed in there. And me and Richard Summerton were fishing in there, and we were chucking into little pockets with the different lure down there. It was a jackal colt, and me and Richard probably caught maybe 40 or 50 fish between us. It was just fish after fish after fish, and literally every cast was covered in weed.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, and that really big fish, I actually dropped it close to the boat that day, but it ate it. I reckon it was probably a handful of, it was almost like a clump of weed as big as my hand on the lure.
Right, and they're still trying to eat it.
And it ate it off the back of it. Like you could still see the lure twitching in the weed, and it ate it. So people get scared of it, but at times you got to find the positive in the negative, and that's one of the ones that I've always been able to produce really big fish from, fishing in those weedy areas of people think there's no way of fishing it, or there is. And finding the one, the key, I found the biggest key is trying to find the one that doesn't drain. And what I mean by that is that if it's not exposed at low tide,
yeah,
you want to go there. So the reason being is the weed gets really good chance to establish nice hidey holes for them, and they're going to feel really comfortable in there. And that's, you know, that's Lake Macquarie, St. George's Basin, a lot of little lagoons that I've fished over in Tasmania and places like that. They all reap that kind of fishing, you know, even Ben River. Found lots of big fish in Ben River doing that as well.
Oh, very good. All right, well, just a couple more things and then I think we're going to bring this to a close. You did touch on 8-foot rods there, and I'm interested to see what you've got to say about that.
Yes.
And feel free to mention sponsors. We're going to come back to that as well. So if there's someone you want to mention.
So there is a rod out there made by Messiah, which is 8'6". It's a beast of a rod. It like unleashes the fury on fish. You can literally skull drag a kilo fish out of racks with this thing. No problems at all. And I've used that predominantly to fish that meter mark with the bigger, deeper crankbait. And then down to the Smith Bay liner. And then the rod that I absolutely love, which I think is, this one's actually 7'6", a little bit smaller, but this is the rod that I pair with the F36 crankbait, which would be the Samaki 7'6" flat rod, the Zing Extreme. For what I do, I absolutely love it. I think it's the perfect rod for a kayak, for flicking on what I in there, shallow stuff. If I was to go back down to a Camion, it's back down to a 7-foot rod, and it's called a Trout and Spin by Smith. The reason being is you can feel all the different little lumps and bumps. Just gives you that, what I was saying before, is I love to feel the lure touching and what it's hitting, and know, you know, the difference between sand, rock, weed, seagrass, even the black weed. If you fish long enough, you'll learn what it feels like.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. I mean, what I like about what you've said through the whole interview, you've actually laid out a really basic plan for people. you know, go and probably start with an S26 from Pro Lure and start with that, and you can catch some real quality fish just using a basic technique from a kayak, or you could probably even target a little of this from the bank. Would that be fair to say?
Well, I was going to say, I found all of this from the bank originally. My kayak, actually, the motor broke one day and I didn't have to take an oar out with me because we had an all electric on it and it broke. I had to wait for my dad to come and help me. And I remember fishing this part at Greenpoint where it was rock and weed, and I was only really young, and it really opened my eyes up to how many big fish were in this little area. And I think it was like maybe 6 years after it, I had a boat and we ended up coming second in a boat tournament just fishing this one little patch of weed rock, and we got blown away like so many times on these camions. I think we went through like $300 worth of camions that day to get out. And we were fishing 6 pound back then.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I do remember the camion. All the Central Coasters were running black camions at one point.
They just caught so much fish. And they still do. Just the S26 has that castability. 36 has that castability. Has that little bit bigger hook. A little tip for the punters out there that do go and get the camion. The camions straight out of the pack don't come with barbs.
Right. I didn't know that.
So you go and get a camion, any colour, froggy or camo or whatever. They have no barbs on their hook. So, yes, they do sneak in nice and easily into the fish's mouth, but I learnt really hard one day that you lose really, really big fish on barbless hooks in tournaments. So, and the lures don't almost swim identical without the same hooks on there as well. So a little bit like unlock Pro Lure where they come out with those beautiful decoys and straight out of the pack.
Yeah. And in terms of Pro Lure, are you still currently sponsored by them?
Yeah, so we're affiliated. I don't like to call it a sponsorship. I prefer to be affiliated. For the reason is I don't want anything for free. I never have. I always want to pay for everything. Some people call it a sponsorship, and I've been with them for years. I was with Samaki for years, which I'm really grateful for. And I don't fish a lot, and I don't feel there's not many anglers out there that actually give back to people like Pro Lure or Samaki. So to take stuff off free for them, you're not doing much for it. So I prefer pay for the stuff, even if costs or whatever. I always try and pay for everything I grab.
Yeah, I think that's really a good response, because the fact that you're paying for it means you're using that lure by choice, not because someone's just giving it to you. So I think it's a testament to the lure itself.
Yeah, that's right. That's the other thing, yeah. And I see a lot of anglers out there that do a lot of stuff that are worth a bit of money, but I also see a lot of guys just think that they should be sponsored just because they go fishing. And yeah, I've always been big about that. Buy your stuff, don't get it for free. And like you said, I choose to actually buy Pro Lure. I walk into shops and buy stuff off them all the time from Pro Lure. I don't just ring up Pete and say, I want this. There's plenty of times I've gone to fishing.com and ordered lures from being Pro Lure and stuff like that as well, because they're a company, they've got to be supported. They don't just sponsor you and make nothing for what you do.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. All right. Well, mate, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think you've shared a lot of stuff unselfishly. So I really appreciate that. So I've got one more question before we wrap it up and call it a night. So for the average angler, if you could just give them just one tip, just narrow it down to one thing that would help improve their fishing. Just we're not talking the gun guys. We're talking your average Joe Blow that wants to try and catch that kilo plus bream or whatever. Have you got anything to say to them?
Yeah, it's very simple. It's taken years and years and years to get it across to people. And there's two, and I would always stand by these two, is that if you think you're winding slow, and put a bit of S factor or guzzly goop on there, which is obviously...
Yeah, so scent, which we didn't touch on, so that's really cool.
And if you want to know what that guzzly goop is, it's just another form of S factor, but from overseas.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just like slang for scent. That's what I thought you were saying.
No, so there's a brand called Guzzly Goop that you can import from, I think it's Singapore, which is just S factor in a different kind of jar.
Okay.
A little bit more useful.
Very good. All right. I'll get you to stay on the line, but I thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I've really enjoyed talking to you. So I hope the anglers out there get a lot from it. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it, mate.
All right. No worries.
Thanks for listening to the Australian Lure Fishing Podcast. I hope you got some great value from today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. In fact, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you subscribe to ALF.
And for show notes, downloads, maps, and other free resources, make sure you go to doclures.com and check out what we've got for ALF listeners there. Until the next episode, stay safe, tight lines, and may the fish be with you.